The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on December 28, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. You few are braving the snow, I guess, huh? But I'm glad you're here. Well, today I'm going to talk about two, three people brought up with me recently, and it's a very enigmatic line or statement in Dogen's Genjo Koan, and not Genjo Koan, what am I saying? Fukan Zazengi. So I thought maybe I'd say something about that today. You may have encountered this line. It is when Dogen says, he'd just given the instruction, you know, sitting down, getting into the correct posture, which is very important, actually. You should pay attention to that. But I'm going to say this too, like on Friday nights, every Friday night, we either recite the Fukan Zazengi, and that's Dogen's universal recommendation for Zazen, or sitting meditation, and either that or Xin Qing Ming, trusting heart mind, and we recite those every Friday night. And not too many people attend on Friday nights, but I would encourage you to, for the sittings, and then at the end of the sitting, then we just recite one or the other, at least generally. But I would encourage all of you, really, to, whether you look at, they're in our chant book, you can find there, which I believe is also on the Dharma Field website. And but very important pieces. So here we have the opportunity to collectively, as a group, every other week, generally, we're going to get one or the other if we attend regularly on a Friday night. Though I know Friday night is a night to go out and howl and all that kind of stuff. So this might be a little bit more subdued than that, I would hope. But very solid teaching there in those two pieces and other pieces too that are in the chant book. But to repeat it, to regularly come back to once a week, every other week, once a month even, and recite these out loud, even to yourself, if not with others, be very helpful for you if you're interested in this practice of Zen. It's one way to establish a pretty solid base, some basis there for you, well, your practice. But anyway, but this is from the Fukan Zazengi then. Somewhat enigmatic when people, well, I was saying after Dogen gives the instruction of, you know, how to sit and get the right position and everything, and then he says, think not thinking. People want to know. I remember myself, too, the first time I encountered this, and it was like, what? And of course, he immediately clarifies it, he does. And he says, how do you think not thinking? And then he says, non-thinking. So it's kind of like, well, thank you very much. You know. And it was years. It took me years of reacquainting on a regular basis. When I started practicing with my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, we encountered this, you know, on a regular basis. And that's why I wanted to retain it here when we started Dharma Field. On a regular basis, come back and just recite this, as well as Xin Qing Ming. But I remember it was a long time, that particular line, and not just me, I mean, all of us, I think, when we encounter that line, think not thinking. And people today, and just recently, I said to several people, for whatever reason, brought this up with me in the last couple, two, 3 weeks. So I thought maybe I should just say a little bit about this. But there were years that went by, and I don't think I could have said a word about it. starting with, because I don't understand it myself. But then when I did realize what Dogen was pointing to there, still found it almost impossible to say anything about this. Strictly speaking, these are just pointing words, think not thinking. Strictly speaking, there's nothing else to say. There isn't anything you can really say about this, but that's right in those words. And it's also the same thing as that work in Xinqing Ming. I'll be talking about Xinqing Ming today too. I'm not going to speak of it here. I'm not going to use the words. I don't think I'll mention it again. But that teaching is just filled with this that Dogen is pointing to there in that phrase, think not thinking. How do you do that? Non-thinking. So is it thinking or not? We might ask a question like that. And of course, that is thinking. Asking such a question, that's thinking. It's not thinking, not thinking. How do you think not thinking? I mean, because for us, for me, thinking was, well, to get an idea, a concept of something, get a picture of it in my mind. Maybe I don't even really have a word for that thing, but something there, a thought, a feeling, you know, a situation that we can describe in kind of a, well, a word that'll just encapsulate a whole collection of various actions or whatever, a circumstance, a situation. Seems like he's saying, you know, about, you know, but okay, now, and then we'll have a word for that thing, whatever it is. But he's saying, well, but don't think that. You know, so what, so you mean like what, make my mind blank? You know, just go silent and not say anything, even to myself? Well, then am I here? Am I connected to anything out there? I mean, why would I do this? I mean, can I do this? Something like that. So it leaves us in a bit of a quandary if we try to pursue this a bit and get some answers. And that's one thing I will say this morning is we don't need any answers for this. There aren't any answers as such. That's just another idea. And this is what Dogen is trying to help us with there. You don't need to rely on ideas or concepts or some structures you can get in your mind. Maybe you don't really have a clear word for that. Of course, we can always slap a label on it and just refer to that. And then maybe with some careful talking with other people over a long period of time, as many Zen students over the years, I'm sure, have discussed this, think not thinking. And maybe here and there we might arrive at different ideas about what this is or what this means. And some might seem right and others might seem wrong, some ideas. And some people might grasp this notion about it or that notion about it. And of course, if they happen to meet someday, there's two different groups or ways of looking at interpreting think not thinking, well, they might have something there to argue with now. But again, that's thinking. That's what our thinking is. It's stuff like that. And if you place something there as a thing, and then you make this think not thinking into a thing, and a real thing, it's, yeah, maybe not tangible in the sense that, yeah, I guess because it's an abstract idea, sort of, but it has application here in the real world or in with me, my mind, and my practice, all of that. It's a thing. Yeah, okay, and it's going to be in conflict with others who are maybe arriving at some other point there. And that is thinking, and pretty soon that's maybe arguing and splintering into different groups or schools or whatever. Well, this is the human world. This is how we carry on and how it unfolds for us and how we end up maybe not so much deliberately, but just through our interactions with others and that sort of thing. This is how everything is sort of unfolding, taking place. Yeah, well, this is precisely what Dogen is trying to help us notice. That mind is business as usual, the way we might carry on with this, or the way that we might struggle with this over time in our own minds. As I did, I don't think I wore myself out with this particular one, but it was always perplexing and difficult. I have no idea what he's saying. Maybe go a little bit with, well, is this what he's getting at, or is that? Maybe discuss that with some other students. Yeah. But it probably was, in my case anyway, probably just sort of a giving up on trying to make some sense of this or get an answer for myself or some explanation. But just continue to practice. And notice the mind, your mind. Is that my mind? But just notice what's taking place, what appears to be coming and going. And not just thoughts and feelings, but also seemingly objective objects out there. And all of that. And myself, including my body and my mind, but then also the bodies and minds of others and objects of various kinds and you know, stuff. But in settling the mind like that, in not trying to make anything of any of this, but just being present, I won't even say be present with this. That language is already in, assuming, well, here you are, here. Me or me, you know, here, that's from our point of view. And then there's all that stuff. That's our ordinary way of understanding everything, moving on through life and interacting with this and trying to find the right way and the best way. And now there's a bad way. Sometimes it's bad and it doesn't work, or it's bad because it's evil, or it's, you know, the endless turmoil and confusion. Latching onto, well, here's a good idea. This works pretty well. Here, look at this. And, you know, there we are with everything. And nothing is ever settled. And in the end, nothing is ever clarified. And there's still, I don't know what it's all about. What is this? Anyway, and I can get pretty discouraging. Well, I've got these things I like to do and people I like to hang out with and various things, you know, a profession I enjoy working in, and could be any number of things. And none of this is bad or wrong, but when we totally absorb ourselves in such without leaving any room for, you know, there's something else here. That's what this thinking, our thinking is about. Pointing out to this not thinking. Of course, we don't entertain that very long because what the hell does that refer to? I mean, I have no idea what that is. Yeah, I don't either, even now today. I'm not confused at all about this, what I'm speaking of, but I have no ideas about that, that not thinking. I won't describe it for you because at the moment I do, but now there's something for you to think about. I'm aware of that. I'm trying to help you to be aware of it and maybe start to understand why I won't do something like that. Or if we slip into that somehow, I'll try to slip out of it a bit, and maybe in a way that might help you to notice that. And that's sort of what I'm doing now, in a way. By the way, can you hear Xin Qing Ming in anything? If you're familiar with Xin Qing Ming, this Xin Qing Ming is all about this. So are other teachings too, by the way. I noticed on our, in fact, this is one of the things that triggered me into thinking, maybe I should talk about this. On the Dharma Field website, we have these little quotes by different teachers and whatever that show up. And I think every time we tap in, it's a new saying. There's a whole bunch of quotes I think we have. They sort of randomly show up, I think. And this one I saw this past week, it was by Hakuin, and he said, because I had in the back of my mind, the thing about think not thinking, not a possibility for talk. And then I read this thing by Hakuin, and he says, find the silence which contains thoughts. This is the think not thinking is another way of expressing this or pointing to this. And we can find this silence. Of course, if we say silence, then that means just silence. And nothing there. The silence that contains thoughts. Okay, thoughts, yeah, they're kind of silent. I can think silently. But so often we're thinking about something. Don't we have to be thinking about something in order for it to be thinking? That's a question. I wouldn't try to answer it, because if you do, you'll keep yourself confused. We can look at this situation we're in, and yes, it can be very noisy, moderately noisy perhaps, or modestly noisy. We have this sound of the jet right now. I don't know if your audio is picking it up or not, but there's a jet passing by somewhere out there. And, that's not silence. But isn't it silence? What exactly is silence? Hakuin says, find that silence that contains thoughts. And the thoughts of, like even the jet, or the sound of the jet, or someone talking, or even your own mind, in turning over one thing or another, perhaps, or you're sitting in silence in meditation, and a sound occurs, where there's just that little crack in the building here from the cold temperatures, it kind of creaks and cracks once in a while, just a second ago or so. I heard a crack in the middle. Well, as we sit here quietly in Zazen, we certainly can experience that. Yeah. So silence. Silent your mind, to quiet your mind. So we might be thinking in terms of absolute quietness. Not a sound. But then silent your mind, find that silence in your mind. It doesn't even have thought. It can't have thought, can it? And be silence? But there's stuff here. Dogen in his Fukan Zazengi, he tells us, keep your eyes open in your meditation. Don't close your eyes. Don't keep them wide open. He instructs you pretty precisely about that. Don't go picking up things with your eyes, but don't close them. Used to wonder about that. Well, why not? I always picture, even on one of my books on meditation, they have somebody on the cover with their eyes shut. I don't give that instruction, and Dogen doesn't either. But why not? Well, the moment you open your eyes, there's a lot of busyness there. So you want to keep your mind quiet your mind, You close your eyes. Now, that would make sense, and it does make sense to us, and that's when people, when they sit down, it seems sensible to close your eyes, yeah. But if you close your eyes, then your mind is still going to just get busy with the thoughts that you can be thinking with your eyes closed. And the thoughts then, well, if they're objects that you're picking up with your mind and playing with them with your mind, that's just noisiness again. Hakama says, find that silence which contains thoughts. Yeah. Find that. So what does that mean then? Well, if it contains thoughts, it's like it's containing things. Thoughts and things are interacting, and it contains motion, or it contains time. Pretty soon, I mean, without us doing very much at all, it seems like we got a whole universe of stuff just starting to move in on this moment. And it's like there's no escape from that. I mean, we're always in this situation, aren't we? And with our regular mind that always seeks to grasp things and to make sense out of things and to conceptualize things and to put it into some kind of form that, and then try to make some sense out of it. And we get these arguments here and those there, and some people follow that way, and then we start fighting with each other. There's that busy, crazy, noisy, insane world. Insane in the sense of just really being out of touch with the actual nature of reality, which isn't like that at all. That's the way it is within a grasping mind. Yeah, so Hakama, it just directs our attention to find that place, find that silence that contains thoughts. That silence that contains sound. We can find that. It's always thus. It's always present in this way. And then we can sit, truly sit quietly. And yet thoughts arise. Yeah, we don't have to pursue them. No, you just, in doing that, you've made it real, substantial. You know, it has some weight and mass, and it can bump up against other things, other ideas, whatever. And then there we are again with this crazy world. But doesn't that always go on? Yes, it does. Okay. But this think not thinking, okay, this silence which contains thought, there's think, there's your think, yeah, but not thinking, there's your silence. The silence, or this not thinking, the Dogen speaks of, or the Hakuin speaks of the silence, this isn't silence or not thinking in the way that the conceptualizing mind, the grasping mind, will see it. Because it'll take even something like that and make it into a thing, the silence. And we even say, the silence. As if we got a thing there, the silence. But is that silence? No, of course that's not silence. Well, what is the silence? Well, the true silence, contains thoughts, contains things. True silence. That, if you look carefully, happens to be the world. Well, that's the world. Definitely say that we're in. Can't be otherwise. It's thus. Is not that it has things or thoughts. Things and thoughts appear to come and go. And sometimes they can get very silent in our conventional way of thinking silent. The mind can go very quiet for a time. Somebody once asked my teacher, how long can you just sit and just... And he says, maybe 2 minutes. This was before I understood any of this yet. 2 minutes? Well, that's not good. I mean, that's, you know, I thought, can't you sit that way for hours? But I didn't understand yet. The stuff can come, the stuff is always, always coming and going. Whether it's in the mind or in the world around us, it's always things coming and going. Birth and death, you know. Things are made, things are destroyed, they're coming and they're going. Is anything really made or destroyed? Or is anything truly born within their birth? Yeah, try to get all of that. Or death? Yeah, we should try to get all of that. So you say, what, am I suggesting that there's no birth and no death? No. Look, there appears to be birth and death. So there is birth and death. You know, the grasping mind is going to want to fix it in some way. And that is the silence. That's our conventional idea of silence, or that world of where there's silence, or we want to make silent. It's not the silence Hakuin is speaking of, or the not thinking that Dogen is speaking of. But this is what we can wake up to. And it was in waking up to this in a completely different way from what I'm speaking of now, here, when I first realized this and I saw this, then I finally realized what Dogen was pointing out there. And before long, I wanted to help others with this, and but I also very quickly learned I can't say anything about any of this stuff without just creating more noise, so to speak. Things for people now to grasp, and then I'd say, well, no, but I don't mean that. And so, well, then what are you talking about? How do we even talk about this? My teacher wanted me to give talks. I said, how do I? You can't talk about this. Well, but as he said, then he says, well, if you don't say anything, nobody will understand. You have to say something. But what I'm trying to help you with now, and then we have these things in our teaching, even in Dogen, with Hakuin. Also Katagiri, another thing that came up on our website, on the Dharmfield website, too, just in the last few days when I was first kind of thinking maybe I'll try to talk about this on Sunday. And where my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, he said, within conceptual awareness, you must be free of conceptual awareness. Within conceptual awareness, this is consciousness, conceptual awareness. And it's the world of things that are divided out from a otherwise seamless whole. This is consciousness. It's a world of concepts. Yeah. And with that, we get caught, because the things that then end up being conceptualized or delineated out and separated out in various ways, whether mental or physical or any way you want to think about, and they'll come with the appearance of, well, birth and death and time and all these other things, but also, you know, coming and going, but also solidity, substance, that they're things, they're substantial. And now there's going to be the disturbance about these things. Oh, we don't want that. Oh, I love this, though. And on we go. There we are. But that's in the conceptual. So as my teacher said, well, within the conceptual, you know, you must be free, you know, what do you say? Within conceptual awareness, you must be free from conceptual awareness. And to be free from conceptual awareness is just through pure awareness. And this pure awareness, I've come to call it, well, this is perceptual, or perception itself, or perceptual awareness, or just pure awareness. If I was writing it out, I'd give it awareness with a capital A. Actually, now I'm thinking maybe I'll just italicize it. I don't know. But I'm working on a book. I'm struggling with this right now myself. How do I present this in print? But that's my problem. But this is a different awareness. That's the point I want to get across to people. Than our conceptual awareness of things and thoughts and, you know. And for most of us, we spend all of our time in that world of the conceptual, the graspable, the thinkable. And sometimes they're perplexing and things at times, and so we try to come up with a way to look at it. And yeah, so we define new things and new structures of things to encapsulate this group of stuff that's kind of like that. And there we are. And we think the whole time that now we're dealing with reality. Well, not ultimately, no. Not directly. Not in a way where we can understand the nature of reality. The nature of reality is seen in with perception, which is different from conception, where we form something. Kadri says that. So within conceptual awareness, we must be free of conceptual awareness. You know, how can we be free of conceptual awareness? It isn't to destroy conceptual. You can't destroy our conceptual awareness or the conceptually constructed world, the world of consciousness that appears as various beings and things coming and going. It certainly looks this way. And for most of us, you know, that's it. And then we try to figure everything out working with that. You'll never do it. Awakening is when suddenly you realize this and you can see that there's something else to this. And this something else isn't like outside the bubble of a conceptual world or whatever. Like it's out over here. No. I mean, it could be, but that's not the way to look at it. Because it's right here in this apparent world of coming and going. Here it is. But this is, and that I'm speaking of there, that's also the not thinking. And that's also the silence that Akawin is speaking of. Yeah. But it's the silence that contains thoughts. It contains the conceptual. And the conceptual gives the appearances of substantiality. And you know, but that's all we see is the stuff that can be grasped and held in the conceptual mind and all of this, objects of consciousness that appear and all of that. And they're taken as though they have substance of their own and that they are things of their own. Well, if the world actually were that way, nothing would be happening. Because everything is just, it can't be something else. There has to be, say, you, an observer outside looking at some of that at least for it to show up. But of course, that's also another constructed idea. Yeah. But that stuff can't be the whole thing. That can be seen directly. That can be realized directly. But it doesn't have now a perceiver. Like me, you know, you. You're the perceiver. And don't talk, that's going back into the conceptual again. And we keep going there because, well, first by habit, but also it's virtually impossible to say anything outside of that. Even now, I'm resorting to all sorts of things. We want to go back and analyze what I'm saying, and it's fine. I wouldn't do that, but I'll just admit it. No, yeah, you'll always find constructive things, because it's impossible to talk otherwise, or to relay things. And my teacher, when he wanted me to start talking, I said, well, we can't, you know. Yeah, but you have to. So eventually, I kind of learned some of that, how to talk. But it's not conventional teaching. It's not conventional learning. We're trying to teach somebody to, okay, now understand the nature and the shape of that object and pick it up, and now you can use it over here and do that. It's not that kind of thing at all. It's either a matter of we see this, the nature of this, or we do not. And in the seeing of it, and by the way, you do see this. You do have a full-fledged perceptual experience. Well, I say you do. See, that's already constructed. But this isn't something foreign, mysterious, being hidden from you somewhere, or something you have to figure out. It's nothing like that at all. How do we find? But just pay very careful attention. Think, not thinking. Just sit there. Think, it's awareness. But with this, is this not thinking? So you're thinking this, but it's not thinking. It's not the conceptual. It's this silence that contains thought, that contains things, contains objects. Well, maybe I've gone on far enough here. But I'll pause at this point. Any questions about anything I've said here?
I have a question.
Yes. Yes. It's impossible. It's impossible to. But that's what we're interested in here. That's what this practice is to go beyond the intellectual, to see beyond it. Because we actually do see beyond the intellectual right now. We're born that way, so to speak. The whole thing is, what can I say, given to us. All these words are wrong, of course. Just trying to point to something here. But it's impossible to be without this. We just cloud it up through our thinking, and thinking that the objects of our thought are real things and stuff like this. If we look very carefully, their true nature isn't real, not in the way that we think. That they have their own substance, their own being, and this sort of thing. Things are not real in that way. Were things real in that way, you can just look at this for a while. Don't think about it so much, but just keep looking at it. You'll realize that nothing could be happening. In other words, consciousness would wink out at that. There's no consciousness is the fact that things are without substance. Were things to have substance, there's no consciousness. Because we think things are substantial, that's why the people today are trying to figure out what consciousness is, and can we build machines that are conscious, all that kind of stuff. No, you're completely off on the wrong track with that. Totally, completely. You'll never get anywhere with it. And it's because you're still trying to come up with an answer here, a theory, whatever, that'll work, but it's made of parts that we think are real. And it just isn't, it can't be that way. Were the world really in that way? No, we can't have consciousness. Consciousness is of a totally different nature than that. And that has to be seen directly. And we do, that's the perceptual. Okay, that's the not think. But that's the perceptual. And that's also available at every instant. It's just a matter of settling the mind, not hanging on to this or that or one thing or another and trying to explain it. There's nothing to explain here. It's a matter of just either we see this or we don't. And at some point we can wake up to what the actual experience is. Then all of a sudden a lot of these teachings, like these little quips I took off of Dharmafield's website randomly here, show little hints of it. And as I mentioned too, the Xinjing Ming is just, if you go back and look at the Xinjing Ming, and if you can bear in mind some of the things I tried to point out this morning, you see it's just loaded with what I've been pointing to this morning. That's the nature of this teaching. It's all kind of, parts of it are pointing to the whole thing all the time. You know, that's how you can kind of tell the true teaching, so to speak, from those things that are just constructed intellectually. There might be a nice essay there or a nice, you know, and that might be very helpful and useful in many ways, you know, but it's not Dharma. It's not coming from seeing the true nature of this in totality. That is directly available to all of us all the time, but it's a matter of us finally learning to step free, to constantly be hooked by the idea that there's something. And there's that big question, why is there something rather than nothing? Well, if you look very carefully, you realize we don't actually have something. We can't say that we have something. Obviously, we don't have nothing. This is not nothing, obviously. You don't have to worry about that so much. But the problem is we think that there's something then. No, we can't really say that there's something. Try to get hold of any piece of it. That's what I've been trying to help to point to this morning. And it seems to drag in everything else, and that isn't going to form as an object, the whole thing, you know. But there we are. But we can see this nature of what's taking place here. And this is what awakening is when finally we see that directly, and not out of ideas, not out of a constructed views or something like that. And this is available directly for all, but that's what this practice is. If we can slide into these deeper pointings and not be frightened off or totally perplexed to, oh, I can't, this is crazy, you know. And people do that too. It kind of hurts me when I see people turn, I could have done a better job maybe to help them realize what this really is. But the trouble is, it's so subtle, it's really hard to... Well, you can't even really point it out. I'm going to say it's hard to point out, but you can't even really point it out. Well, maybe we can, I don't know. But this is what I've spent my life doing, then, is trying to make this clear for people. But it's hard.
There's a, yeah, like what you're saying there,
yeah, well, don't make a big labor out of it, or, you know, see, that's another mistake we'll make, because now it's like we have to be concentrated on something, and we're creating something there. It's just a matter of very gently and quietly noticing when you've slipped off, that's all. And come back. You realize, okay, this is delusion, okay, then just come back. And also, don't dismiss the delusion like, well, that's bad-ish, let's get rid of that. No, you can't get rid of delusion, we're swimming in it. But when you're hooked by it, that's what we can notice. And then when you're caught on one of those lines or threads or whatever that's taking you away from just this, just realize that, and you can just let that go immediately, and you're back, here you are. You're right here. So it's a matter of we wander off and come back, sometimes we can wander off for a long time, for quite a while, really get entangled in things again. But we can, if we could just remember, you know, the simplicity and the purity of the practice, so to speak, just let that go, come back. Because ever from the moment I saw this, that's what my life has been mostly, is just trying. It was at first, it was pretty rusty, but just keep watching my mind. And when I start to realize, well, I'm getting too hooked on this or that, just let it go, let it go. Kind of works on your ego too, because that enters into it a lot. Well, you what? After a while, that could start to look pretty silly, you know, to yourself. I mean, that helps a lot. But it's a matter of, if you just get a glimmer of what it is I'm trying to help you notice this morning, if you can truly taste that in its purity, that's the thing to just, don't lose sight of it. You will. I did, even today, I lose sight of it. But I'm getting better at noticing that I've lost sight, and can just come back. But that's kind of all it is. We wander off and then we come back. You wander off and come back. But the coming back to what? Well, this is what I've been trying to indicate this morning, that there is something here, you know, for us to see and to realize. Well, I say something, but then, because language kind of forces it, but it isn't something. It isn't a thing or a thought or nothing to say. But it's very clear if we see it. It. It's clear if we see. You can get rid of the if, we. Get rid of all of that. And then after that, you can just live your life and just notice when, you're treating things as if they're too real, too solid, and we're getting all charged and energized and angered or elated or whatever about this or that. Just, okay, calm down now. Come back. And that's what Kadagiri is speaking of here, within the conceptual awareness, you know, all the stuff with, you know, but we must be free of conceptual awareness. And that is this think not thinking. So thank you. If there's any.
Steve, can I ask a question?
Yes.
The quote that Queen said, if I'm pronouncing that right, mind silence that contains thoughts. I keep thinking of the quote from Mind quote that you shared a lot that's helped me. You know, the wise reject what they think, not what they see.
Right.
Can you think of it that way? You know, we can't stop thinking, obviously. But just another way of saying is don't grasp
your thought. Don't grasp it too tightly. Yeah. Yeah. You might have to grasp thoughts here and there, but don't grasp them too tightly. And with the idea that now I've got something here, you know. Eventually we can learn to, well, just simply not do that. But this is important, though. It's not that the conceptual is bad or wrong. We need it. We function with it, you know, in this world of this and that. And we it isn't like the world of this and that. While it's illusory, it doesn't mean it's nothing, you know. So we have to deal with it. But we can deal with it in its own nature and not as we imagine it to be, which is solid and real. And that's all. So it's a matter of just shifting from that and in the kind of mind things that go with it and the values we lay on various things, up or down or whatever. That's to live with real freedom, that freedom of mind. That's called nirvana, actually, freedom, this kind of freedom. Did you have another thought there? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Just remember that thoughts are relative truths, you know, as you might say. Like,
at best, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, maybe we should end it here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.